Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again for hitting that play button for another episode of the Hetty Coleman Podcast, where I have these wonderful conversations with fabulous people just about who they are, the work they do. And in that, I hope that you're able to pull from it some things that you can learn from, but also just learn about them. Then also you are inspired by them. And at the end of the day, I believe that whenever we share our stories, there's this connecting that happens, which leads to community. And as always, as I like to say, community wins. And today, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down with the one and only Josh Norman.
What's up, man?
Nothing. How you doing? Nothing at all, huh?
Nothing at all, just, man. Just one day at a time.
Just COVID, trying to coach and COVID.
You know what I'm saying? Just
something that has never happened before, ever, I guess.
Not in our lifetime, for sure.
Not in our lifetime.
Not in my parents' lifetime.
Yeah, that's, man.
It's been generations since anything like this has ever happened. So
I was trying not to have any COVID conversations, but I always think about when I found out about Seattle, where they kind of had, the people had taken over a precinct and kind of had shut down a few blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wouldn't go. Like, that's stuff that I can imagine in other countries, but I never would have thought that that would happen in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy times for sure, man.
It is, yeah, nuts.
It's like I said, it's something I've never seen in my lifetime ever. Never could have even imagined that something like this would happen in my lifetime, you know?
Not at all. So tell me what 10 years from now looks like from Josh Norman. Let's look forward, and then we're going to kind of work back and then come back forward. 10 years from now, where's Josh Norman?
10 years from now, I'd like to be head coach at the Division I level. I'd like to have me at least one restaurant up and going.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, still be doing my passion of music production, man. That's and still married. That's definitely on my 10-year goal.
That's crazy. You would even have to think that kind of stuff now.
Yeah, yeah. I plan to be still married. Yeah.
That's good. Man, coaching versus being a player. Mm-hmm. Coaches versus being a player. Talk to us about the differences there, and maybe even talk about what you love about one over the other. What is it like, coaching versus being a player?
Responsibility. That's really what it boils down to. You know, as a coach, you just have so much more responsibility and so much time that you have to put into it. As a player, you know, you show up, the coach has everything prepared for you. You go to practice and you take care of your business. And outside of that, you know, it's on your plate to, it's your responsibility as a player to, you know, do some extra studying and stuff like that. Maybe some extra work on the field. But as a coach, you're doing all of that plus preparing to teach, preparing to provide all of this information to the players. And so it's just – and then, you know, as a head coach, you're preparing to what to give your coaches. You're mm-hmm. scheduling stuff. And so it's just, you know, even more as a head coach of time that you have to put in. And just, you know, depending on the type of coach you are, I mean, I'm a coach who's big on building relationships with players, coaches, parents, community. And so, you know, it's a lot of time that goes into it, a lot of thought process. And like I said, the huge responsibility of doing right by all of those people, you know, in your care.
Yeah. Talking about building relationships with the players, what are some key things that you say I need to be consistent in order to build this relationship with my players, the relationship that you see is the most important?
Communicating. You know, now I'd like to believe, and I wholeheartedly believe, that my players know that I genuinely care about them. Mm-hmm. More than just football. You know, when I coach hard on the field, and so there's going to be times that they kind of maybe feel like I don't, mm-hmm. you know, I don't like them or whatever. But I've learned over the years that because I coach so hard on the field, that I have to be intentional about off the field, engaging mm-hmm. with them, saying hello to them, speaking to them, asking them about how they're doing, asking them about how things at home are going, shooting them a text message,
yeah,
things like that. But then also just within the program, the way I built my program, an example would be, because we base our program off three C's, character, community, and championships.
Okay.
And so part of our championship motto or theme or whatever you want to call it, but is, you know, we want to build life champions. Mm-hmm. And so when every sixth hour at the school is athletics period. And, you know, that's the time that you can get extra weights in, some conditioning, agility, maybe film work, or extra practice, something like that. But every Thursday during that period, we're not going to do any of that. We're not going to put on cleats. We're not going to put on pads. We're going to go to a classroom and we're going to develop life skills. And so I started this back in February with the guys. And, you know, it proves to them that as a head coach, I care more than just football. If I'm willing to take time that we have reserved to do football things,
yeah,
but we're just feeding it to your life to That's build good. Life skills, whether it's financial literacy to character development, conflict management, you know, interpersonal communication, things like that, that we're trying to build in these young men. I think that shows them that we care more about that. And even after spring break, when we weren't able to return to class, we were doing two Zoom meetings a week. And mind you, we hadn't, because I was a new coach, I was planning on installing all of our offense and defense stuff after spring break. So I wasn't able to do that. And so I was like, well, we're going to meet twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. One of those days is going to be reserved for football stuff, and other one is going to be reserved for life skills, you know? And so, you know, I think it's things like that that helps build relationships, because things like that sparks conversation mm-hmm. between the players. They now they're coming and saying, because they're thinking about life long term, mm-hmm. and they're coming in like, coach, man, like as far as jobs, you know, if I want to do this, like I was thinking about going to college, but I don't know, you know what I'm saying? And so that's kind of the approach I've taken in all of those ways to build relationships with my players.
That's good. That's really good. So had you seen that done before, or is that just something that came to you? Like you were thinking like, how can I really cultivate a great relationship with these students, and adding this kind of value to them was a way of you seeing that, or had you seen that model somewhere? How did you come about doing that?
No, I've never seen that. How that model came about was, you know, just giving intentional thought to how to feed into these young men. Mm-hmm. But the original thought came because as I've gotten older and, you know, done this adulting thing, it's like, dang, why didn't nobody teach me about financial literacy?
Yeah.
Like, why aren't they teaching that in schools?
Yeah.
Why aren't they teaching, you know, interpersonal communications mm-hmm. in schools? Mm-hmm. Why aren't they teaching us about job preparation
yeah.
and professionalism in yeah. schools? And so it was just like, well, take it upon yourself to teach
yeah.
it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have their minds. You have this group of kids that you can influence.
Yeah.
Well, do it yourself. And
yeah.
if it means that much to you, take time away from football to do it. And so that's kind of how I came about that. I developed this 5 or 6 years ago before I was ever a head coach. I was a head coach before that, but at, you know, the past 6 years I haven't been a head coach. And so I developed this about 5 or 6 years ago, and knew that when that time came, like, that's what I was going to do. And I was going to stick to my guns. I was going to make sure that, you know, because it's easy, you know, you get into the season and it's like, man, we got to prepare for the next opponent. We got to prepare for the next opponent. Use every second to do that. But it's like, well, take a step back, slow down. Mm-hmm. Like, is that one 45-minute session going to make that big of a difference?
Yeah.
If it is, then you got bigger problems within uh-huh. your program as far as winning and losing games on Friday mm-hmm. nights. So
I'm just thinking about how they're going to see you when they leave, you know, like 5 years
yeah.
after they graduate, 10 years after they graduate, because like what you said, oftentimes people are like, why don't they teach that in school?
Yeah.
Why didn't they teach me about taxes in school? Like, there's these different things that come up that yeah. we're always talking. So they won't think that, but maybe if they hear some of the other people around them saying that, they'd be like,
exactly,
man, we, like, they're going to think that's normal.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. You're right. They're going to be like, my football coach taught us that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which, that's really good, man. That's really yeah. good. When did you first touch a football?
Shoot, man. I was probably 1 year old. Or, okay. I mean, as far back as I can remember. And I'll never forget this, man. We actually had these. And here within the last 5 or 6 years, we found it at my house. Like,
get out of here.
Stuffed toys that we had from when we were little kids. A stuffed football and a stuffed soccer ball.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, just soft stuffed toys. And the crazy thing is we used to play with those when we were really young. But as we got older, we started using them as boxing gloves because they were pretty big. And so we'd just grab it to where it cushioned our hand and we'd box each other. Me and my brothers would box each other with them. But yeah, that football, man, that stuffed football was the first time I ever held a football. First time I ever played was when I was in third grade, and I played for 18 years straight after that.
After that, it was just sky's the limit kind of thing.
Yeah.
So thinking about that, like, there's that point in high school where I'm assuming, because you played collegiate ball, mm-hmm. University of Oklahoma, that you were a pretty good athlete, mm-hmm. right? What was that transition like? Because you know, it's such a big deal now. Like, ESPN talk about it. I go through my feed. They talking about the top 10 recruits.
Yeah, it's crazy now.
It's crazy. Like, what was that transition like for you? Because it may not have been like it is today. It was still crazy, though.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate. My older brother, who's a year older than I am, he went through the same process. And so I got to see him do it. And so to me, it wasn't like I was learning anything new.
Mm-hmm.
We had experience because I pretty much was, you know, when he went on some of his recruiting visits, I'd go with him. We'd talk to him, talk about it after he got back from some of them. My dad would be there with him. And so my dad was, you know, naturally there with me on all of my recruiting visits. And so it was a great experience for me, you know, being able to, you know, to take those visits to see you know, kind of weigh my options on where I wanted to be. The reasons I wanted to be there, you know, it was a great learning experience for me. And then, you know, just transitioning from, you know, West Texas town to Norman, Oklahoma, to a big university like that. Crazy thing is I graduated and within a week I was here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was here in Norman at the University of Oklahoma, and I was gone, you know, like that was like, it was like, it happened that fast, you know? And so, you know, it was just a learning experience, man, you know, just being away from home, not having that, that parent to tell you when you can do what, you know, and just kind of having to manage your own life. It was definitely a learning experience and different experience for me for sure.
What were some of those reasons that you said you, when you're, you know, thinking through the different reasons why you would go mm-hmm. wherever, what were some of the, like, what were some things that you were thinking through?
For me, it was just opportunity, athletically, academically, socially. Those were the main things. Like, what would my opportunity be on the football field?
Mm-hmm.
Like, would I actually have an opportunity to play, you know, in my 4 years there? Two, what were the opportunities academically? Like, what degree am I going to get? Will I have the opportunity, not just the opportunity, but the support to finish that degree, you know? And then socially, you know, would I enjoy being around the campus and the people, the culture on campus, the culture within the program? And at the time, John Blake was the head coach. And so, you know, he was a huge influence on me coming to Oklahoma. Huge. Like, I'd say 80% of the reason that I chose to be here. He was a guy that I saw as, you know, like a father figure away from home. You know, mm-hmm. him being a black man, him being a Christian and, you know, being wearing his faith on his sleeve, you know, and like, those are huge influences for me coming to University of Oklahoma.
Thinking about you saying, well, I have an opportunity to play within 4 years. How do you know that? Like,
You just look at the depth chart. Look at the number of spots on the roster. How many running backs do they have? Who are these running backs? And, you know, I mean, a big part of that is also communicating with the coaches who are recruiting you. And, you know, really trying to get a feel. Can you trust them in what they're saying? Mm-hmm. If they're telling you that, yeah, you'll start next year, but then mm-hmm. they have, three All-American running backs in front of you. It's like, probably not going to start next year. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of just weighing all of, you know, taking all of that into consideration in how you view, you know, if you're going to have that opportunity.
Yeah. Tell me what 2000 was like.
Man, that was a, it was fun, man. You know, I think it was more magical to everyone else outside the program. To us, we were chasing the goal that we had set for ourselves, you know? And so it was more, you know, of a business mindset. We believed that we could do it every game. There wasn't a game we played that year that we didn't feel like we could win. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was just a matter of us just executing and doing what we needed to do in order to win.
Yeah.
And I think to everyone else, the reason it's called such a magical year is because they didn't expect that, you know, but we knew going in how, who we were and what we could do. And so, I guess to sum it up, it was more of a situation where, you know, at the end, it's like, dang, we did it, you know, like we did it. So, yeah.
That's cool. Do you, like, is that like yesterday to you? Like, or does it like?
Nah, it feels like a long time ago.
Okay.
Especially when I look at the videos from then now. It's like, dang, we old, man. It's all, the footage is all grainy and stuff. It's like, ah, dog. No, it feels like a long time.
It does not feel like yesterday.
It does not. No.
For those of you listening or watching, whatever, Josh was part of the 2000 OU National Championship team, and we hadn't won a national championship
at 15 years at that point.
15 years, so 1985.
It's been longer now than it was.
Barry then. Switzer. It's been longer now. It doesn't even feel like it.
I know.
I think we hold on because that was the only one. We hold on to that thing like it was. That's what I think. Maybe it's for me. It's like, no, that was yesterday we won that.
That's
national.
Real. But to me, man, every year, you know, we've been in the national championship game 5 or 6 times since then.
Yeah.
Or maybe 4 times, but then we've been in the playoffs every year for the last 4 years. And to me, it just solidifies every year that we don't win it. It's disappointing that we don't, but it just solidifies how special it was what we did.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, it's hard to do.
That's what they say. It's magical.
Maybe so, but it's hard to do, you know.
Yeah,
like it's hard to win national championships. It's hard to you know, let alone go undefeated in the season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard mm-hmm. to do. So,
So I want to go back to relations with the students because mm-hmm. I'm thinking about this. Oklahoma State University. What's the
Mike Gundy?
Mike Gundy yep. recently, one of the things called out based on the relationship that was not being cultivated with his student athletes. And you said that the reason I came was because of John Blake,
mm-hmm.
80% of it,
yeah,
who he is, what he means to me, all that. Is that something that once the John Blakes or the Josh Norman coaches or Gundy, you attach yourself in the early days of the recruiting process, can make me feel like, man, I'm going to be connected to you by the hip
yeah.
at all times. And it's not true, right?
Yeah.
How do you maintain that, man, it may not be like what it feels like right now, but I'm still here for you.
Yeah.
You know, like, is that something that, like, as a student, that could be hard for me to comprehend, I feel like, especially at 18,
yeah,
right?
No question. You just got to be intentional, you know? I can't speak on Coach Gundy or, you know, we can speak from an outside point of view and then just things that we've heard.
Well, I was just using that example. Because, yeah. But just
no,
thinking
I mean,
about
that's
that would be hard.
Deal. Like that's a real, to me that like that really did show. And, you know, just there's been talk amongst people who are involved with the university, you know, that he does not have a relationship with his players, you know, and I think that kind of just proved it, you know, in what happened here recently. But it's just a matter of being intentional, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the deal. Not every coach is like that, you know, and that is what it is, you know, like especially at the collegiate level, you know, it's so commercialized and professional mm-hmm. at this point.
Such a business.
It's a business at this point that, you know, that's not something that's required and expected of those coaches at this mm-hmm. point. You know, I think back in the days it was. I don't think that's something that's expected and required of the coaches at this point. And, you know, I think the the bottom line is the bottom line, mm-hmm. You know, like if you're winning, if you're, you know, increasing revenue, if you got good relationships with donors, I think that's at that level, that's what it's all about.
And the donor relationship becomes almost more important than the coach player relationship.
No question.
Because without the donors, you really don't have the program per se.
Exactly.
Yeah. But without the athletes, you don't have.
Well,
it's a hard balance.
But that's, you know, they're going to recruit the best players. Mm-hmm. But does that require them having a great relationship with them? I don't.
Yeah.
You know, my approach would be different just because I love people. I believe in building relationships, not just from a coach player perspective, but just from a living life perspective.
Like
relationships are important, you know.
Yeah.
I think I've come to realize that more in the last 3 or 4 years than I ever have in my life.
Why is that?
It's because I moved away from a place that I had built relationships. But I wasn't intentional about building those relationships. And so when I moved away from Oklahoma City 3 years ago, I realized how important those relationships were to me. And on a personal level, on a professional level. And so, you know, I told myself when I moved back, man, like I'm going to be intentional about building relationships with people, you know, and maintaining and sustaining relationships. And so it's really kind of, even though I've had this plan for my program for years now, I find myself being even more intentional, you know, I think it affects more of how I relate with my coaches more than anything, how I hired my coaches and how I relate to my coaches, that's probably the way it's had the biggest influence in my professional career.
Yeah. Talking about relationships, a football team, you build a lot of, like, you spend 4 years with certain, especially high school,
mm-hmm.
you spend 4 years with these athletes or whatever, and those relationships become really important to you. You've been away from college for a good little while now, but, you know, that team, y'all had a very special moment in 2000. What are those like? Do you still have a lot of those relationships?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what does that look like for you today with those kind of relationships?
Oh, man, like, with the relationships, it's crazy, man. Like, the relationships with the guys that I had in college. I remember before I went to college, somebody told me, like, those would be the best 4 years of your life, bar none. And, you know, you'll make lifelong relationships in college. And, like, 20 years later, that's holding true. And I think even more so when you go through what you go through as a collegiate athlete, you know, like what we went through in the off season and summers, like was solidified what we did on the field, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and it solidified who we were, the relationship we had in general. And so, you know, obviously I don't keep in touch with all, you know, probably 200 guys that I played with while I was there.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, that core group of guys that I communicate with regularly. But then even those other guys, man, if I see them, you know, there's been times that I've run into them just out in public. And it's like, we just saw each other yesterday. Uh-huh. You know, we just picked up just like that, you know, and love on each other, hug on each other, and, you know, see their family. You're blessed to see their families, their kids, you know. It's just, it's a special bond that, you know, will never be broken, you know. Like, really. Like, there's really, because of what we went through, you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people don't understand what collegiate athletes go through. They just see them on Saturdays and think that that's the bond, where the bond is built. But mm-hmm. that bond is built throughout the summers and the off seasons, for sure.
Talk to me, like, some of the things that somebody may not would imagine. And the reason I say that is because often, so that struggle of getting through those practices together, learning the playbook,
mm-hmm.
the challenges of doing that almost can feel like somebody who had to struggle in life, like grew up in a community or a neighborhood where they didn't have much and all that stuff. And those kind of kids, you see, my son said to me the other day, which is crazy. He's like, "Dad, I don't know if I'll ever be successful." And I was like, "Why?" He said, "Because every time I read a book, the people who seem like they were successful."
That's hilarious.
Had a hard life. I was like,
no,
I had never, you know,
that's hilarious.
I think that I think oftentimes, and so that's the reason I'm saying, like, not a, now that's a hard life, like mm-hmm. growing up in certain situations and homes and things like that. But there's also this hard life of doing the work together, getting conditioned together. Like, those are two different things. But what you're speaking of is, like, in that, as we did that, we bonded.
Yeah.
We got to know each other. We won a champion. We seen success because of it, right?
Yeah.
Share something that you, like, I don't think people understand, like, this, the hardness of it. Like, what would be something that you, well, like?
The truth is, if you, you know, unless you've done it, you probably will never understand. Yeah. Like, you know, you can, like, people understand that we go through hard workouts and we run and, like, but unless you're actually there, like, if I was to tell you, yeah, we ran 10 hills, you know, with a 75-pound weight vest on and then another 75 pounds pulling behind us, like, then, okay, like, that ain't going to really have an effect. What I tell my players is, and I learned this from my experience as a player, is that if, you know, if we're running gassers, which is from one sideline to the other sideline and back, you know, like, say, four times or whatever, or
those
two
are
times
evil.
Or whatever.
That's evilness.
Yeah, it's hard. But, you know, if we're running gassers and we got 10 of them and you're dog tired on number four, like, if you can figure out how to make it through number five, mm-hmm. and it's 100 degrees outside and you're dog tired, you don't want to do it, but you figure out how to get through number six, you figure out how to get through number seven, then what you're doing is you're figuring out how, you know, when you're an adult and you lose, you have a tragic loss in your family, mm-hmm. you're figuring out how to continue to get up mm-hmm. and keep going. Mm-hmm. When, you know, you're having, when you're married, you're figuring out how to do whatever it takes to take care of your wife, yeah. and to do what it takes to hold true to that commitment that you made in your marriage. You're figuring out how to do whatever it takes to just keep getting up and keep going. And so, you know, when we talk about those bonds that were developed amongst us, you know, from a team perspective, you know, the results of that show, and I think it continues to show throughout our life. But from an individual perspective, you know, you're building these disciplines in your life that, in a lot of cases, can only come through the fire. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, to me, that's the significance of what we were building. And, you know, I'd say it all the time, man. Our strength and conditioning coach, Jerry Schmidt, like, I have such a heart and a love for him. I hated him in college. Hated him. Like, even to this day, there'll still be nights, random nights, where I wake up and I'm like, oh, shoot, did I miss my clock? Because I'm thinking I'm going to be late for workouts. It's like, I'm 40 years old. Like, you ain't got to do that no more. But that's still, like, he had us shook. Anyway, but I, like, right now, understanding what he built in us, what he built in me specifically, it's like, it's invaluable. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And I'm so grateful for him for not cowering down and, you know, doing what a lot of other people or a lot of other coaches would do and just be like, oh, it's okay. You know, like, but no, man, like, understanding that this is bigger than just football, you yeah. know, like, you're changing lives and you're setting people up for success in their life. So
for sure. Yeah. What was Josh Norman the kid like? What was the middle school Josh Norman like?
I was a handful.
Were you really?
I admit that. Yeah, I was. So I got this. I have a mischievous personality, and so I like to
rub people.
Yeah, just mess with people until they reach their point, and then I pull off. You know, but and my wife, she can confirm that. She hates.
This wasn't middle school. This is now.
That's every adult is just the older version of their middle school self. Like, that's
true.
That's a fact. I've just learned how to be.
You
be
learn how better, to manage it.
Exactly. Learn how to manage it.
I tell my son that all the time. I'm like, bro, just learn how to manage it. That's all you need to do.
Yeah. So I wasn't a bad kid. Like, I wasn't disrespectful. You know, I just did little, like, you know, I was one of those kids who's going to be talking in class. And then the teacher tell me to shut up, I shut up, and then I get back to talking until I really felt like they were boiling, about to lose it.
Yeah.
And I just shut it down, you know. But, and that was just me in general. I like to pick with people and mess with people, have fun. And, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't carry over well in the middle school classroom.
Did you have any key moments in middle school that kind of you reflect back on today and you like, hey, that played a leadership part in my life or anything like that? Or was there anything as an athlete?
Man, I can't think of anything in junior high specifically. Honestly, the crazy thing is when I think about junior high, I think about, you know, my 8th grade football coach telling me I'd never play for my high school football team.
Really?
Yeah, like that's one of the things that, like, to me that like that's something that I would feel is a pivotal point in my life, you know, where I can buy into that.
For sure.
I can say, no, I'm gonna prove him wrong. And that was a big part of, you know, why I felt like my challenge and my desire to not only play in the NFL, but, you know, to not to just make it to the NFL, but to play in the NFL. Like, that drove me a lot, you know. So
8th grade year, you're not going to play in high school. Like, this is what the coach is telling you.
Yeah.
What was that summer like? Like, did that change how you approached football? Like, that you can recall? Or did you keep just kind of playing the same way?
I just kept playing, man, because I knew I was good. I mean, you know, from Little League all the way through junior high. Like, you know, my 7th grade year. Now, granted, you know, I didn't do everything I was supposed to. My 7th grade year, I flunked. And I failed a class, and so I only played 3 games that year, and then I was ineligible for the rest of the year.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I was ineligible for the rest of that season. And then come 8th grade year, you know, they put me on B team and had me playing. I played running back all my 4 years in Little League, my 7th grade year, and then they had me at, like, cornerback and wasn't even playing me at running back. And, you know, no big deal, whatever. But, you know.
Was this your whole 8th grade year? Did you start? Ever?
No.
Your 8th grade year, you never even started.
Nope. And then my 9th grade year, in our first scrimmage, I broke my leg and didn't even play my 9th grade year. And so, you know, but it's crazy. Like, when I think back to it, the only time that I was like, dang, am I ever going to play football was when I first broke my leg. I'm a kid. I don't know nothing about it. I'm thinking like, oh, it's over. I'm never going to play again. Yeah, you know,
you didn't know, like, broke legs. Everybody,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. They're like, calm down, dude. All right, we're going to cast it. You're going to be in the cast for some months and then you're going to be fine, you know? And so, but that was the only moment, you know, that I was like, dang, it's over. And they're like, no, you still play, you know? And so, and then my sophomore year, I ended up playing a lot on varsity and started my last 2 years, and probably should have started my sophomore year, but they had a senior in front of me who had played there, you know, for 3 years, and he was well deserving of starting, you know. And so, yeah, man, it was, you know, my 3rd grade teacher. So, like, when I was young, from the first time, like, I started watching football and stuff, I always wanted to play in the NFL. That was, like, my thing. I want to play in the NFL. So my 3rd grade teacher knew that, and she even told me. She was like, you'll never do that.
Wow.
It's just like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like, even as an adult now, back then as a kid, it always blew my mind how somebody could say that to a kid, even more so now that I'm an adult. It's like, how can you tell a kid? Like, how he's in 3rd grade. You know, you don't know anything about the, you know, how this kid's, you know, physically is going to grow, what they're going, you know, like, whatever. So, yeah.
So was there any leadership things, like, going into high school? You said you played some your sophomore year. Was there anything that you saw in you, or is there a story around you starting to recognize what it meant to be a leader in high school? Or when did leadership start to matter to you or become a thing?
I can't define any one particular time in my life, but it's like I can't remember a time that it wasn't important to me. Mm-hmm. Like, leadership wasn't important to me. And I always felt like I don't know, I didn't know how, but I'm talking about from when I was young, you know, elementary kid, I always knew that I would be in some type of position of leadership. And so I think it's a matter of my personality type, a man of conviction who, you know, believes that things have to be done a certain way. And then just over the years, I've just learned and I've seen how successful programs do things. Mm-hmm. And I just naturally, you know, want to put those in place. And,
yeah.
You know, I've been in places where those things weren't being done and it just drove me crazy. And it was always like, okay, I should be doing this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
that's good. So when did music come a part of your life, or was it always a part of your life? And tell me the first time you touched a keyboard, what was it?
Yeah. A piano, my grandmother's piano. She had a piano in her living room, and whenever I'd go over there, I'd tinker on it. And I started kind of teaching myself to play. And then when I was like a sophomore or junior in high school, they bought me a piano, and it was out of tune and never got it in tune. But so it just
jamming.
It was just pretty much just a furniture piece. And then when I got to college, I started to learn even more about, you know, playing the keys. When I was young, like junior high, I started writing poetry. And okay. So I would listen to songs like Boys to Men and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I would transcribe their lyrics and try to figure out how they wrote them. And I, you know, kind of compare that to my poetry. And so that's kind of how I started to learn to structure songs.
Okay.
But never knew that I was just doing that because of the poetry element of it. And then when I got to college, my junior year, I found out that my best friend from my childhood started to do music production. And so the week before we left to go to Miami for the national championship game, I was back at home and I'd learned, well, let me back up. That Thanksgiving, when we came back home, I came back home for Thanksgiving. I learned that he did it. And then when I went back to college, I was like, man, next time I go home, I'm gonna make sure I have me a song so I can record it. And so
the
week before we went to Miami, I took some chords that I just came up with some chords and I wrote a song. And then when I went back home, we laid it down and I recorded it. And so that was the first time I ever did anything. That would have been
was this your freshman year?
It was
junior year. Okay, junior year. Okay.
And then from there, I just started to, you know, any chance I got, which would only be when I went back home, I would work with Savoy, my best friend, and you know, just try to learn some stuff as far as music production. Then when I my rookie year in the NFL is when I started to buy equipment. And like when I first signed my free agent contract, and I think I got like a $10,000 signing bonus, and I went and got me some gear, man. Got me a keyboard, some speakers, and I started making music, man. Like, and then I just every year after that, I just continued to grow and learn from different people and buy my equipment and stuff like that. And so, yeah, that's kind of how that got going.
So when did you first meet Sean Johnson? Was it We Tell Stories that we first met?
No, I met him before that.
Okay.
It was either 2006, 2007. Moses Washington, who's a playwright.
Right.
I went to school. Me and him were classmates at OU. And he was, when I moved back from California in 2006, he was doing plays and I was acting in some of his plays, and he was meeting a friend somewhere. I can't remember. I don't even remember who that was at the point, but we went to her place and Sean was there, and we were just, it was Sean and one of his other friends that were there hanging out. And he said he had music. I bought one of his CDs from him. And I was like, dang, this dude is dope, man. Mm-hmm. It was his first. That was Simply a Vessel Volume 1. And I was like, man, this dude is dope. And I hit him up to connect with him. And, you know, he never would connect with me. You know how Sean is, man. Sean would never connect with me. It's all good, though. We eventually. It's funny because that probably went on for about 3-4 years, me trying to connect with Sean. No, he actually did. He did a song for me. He did. But me and Sean got tight. Let me ask you this. How you think me and Sean got tight? If you know Sean and what triggers him and what he likes, how you think we got tight? Yes, food. When I was living in Moore, I'd be cooking and I'd be like, hey man, I just made some whatever, if you want to come through, I'm there. And like, that's how me and Sean got tight. We started hanging out from him coming to my house and eating. And so, and that was around 2008, 2009, something like that. Wow. When we really started getting close. And so, yeah, man, it's crazy, man. I've known that dude for, it ain't many people, you know, I guess my best friends, all of my best friends I've been around, but I mean, it just surprises me that I've known Sean for like 13, 14 years now, you know?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's been long. So when you first came to We Tell Stories, was it through Moses Washington doing the play stuff?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I think that was my first introduction to We Tell Stories.
Yeah.
When it was at Java Dave's.
Yeah.
And I believe so. I think so. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, I can't.
I just remember just loving it and wanting to be there. And, Janelle, I mm-hmm. linked up with Janelle to record her poems.
Yeah.
Put our album together. And
she's in Arkansas, I think.
No, she's from Arkansas. She's in Florida now.
Oh, she's in Florida. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's Dr. Janelle.
Yeah,
now.
Dr. Janelle. Dr. Yes, Janelle yes. Robinson. Yeah. Dietitian, right? Is that what it is? Around food or something?
Yeah. Nutritionist or whatever. Yep. Yeah, she's at Florida A&M. That's where she teaches.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah, man. Dr. Janelle.
That's super cool. So. Man, so tell me this. So Go Win is about being consistent in those right things that allow for you to achieve the wins you want for your life, so mm-hmm. you can live out your greater story. You're a coach,
mm-hmm.
And right now I would assume like this is the focus. This is the win for you is to be the greatest coach you could ever be.
No question.
What are those? What would you say those are the three right things? Like if you do these things consistently, it's gonna provide for you to be that great coach that you want to be.
All right, so I'm gonna set up my answer with a story.
Okay,
I was interviewing for a job one time. And the coach that was interviewing me asked me, how do you define athletic success? I was like, I'd never been asked that question or even thought about that question. So I spent the next few months trying to figure out how to answer that if I ever got asked it again. And out of that contemplation of that question, it really, you know, kind of defined I was able to define something that I guess I kind of apply to my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I came up with it was, I was like, well, when I'm coaching my kids, like, how am I coaching them? What am I expecting of them? You know, what am I looking for? And so the answer to your question is the consistent execution of the detailed fundamentals with 100% effort. And so I tell my kids sometimes, like, what's the difference between a good team and a great team? And, you know, people say hard work and all that. Oh, good teams work hard, mm-hmm. you know. But in my experience, the difference in the two is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good team is going to come in and, you know, one week you got a great team and the next week you got a mediocre team. You know, Monday's practice, you'll have a great practice. Tuesday's practice, kind of fell off a little bit. A great team is going to be, like, they're going to do the right things, the little things, every single day, mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't just do that the year that they win the championship, but they do it the following year. That's why you got teams like New England Patriots who are constantly battling for the conference championship and the Super Bowl. And so, to me, it's consistently executing the detailed fundamentals with 100% effort. You know, in that you have to define what are those detailed mm-hmm. fundamentals.
Yeah.
You know, like for your life, what is that? You know, for me, it's being prepared with our schedules, our practice schedules, our yearly schedule, our monthly schedule. It's, you know, being prepared offensively because I'm an offensive coach as well. On the game plan, not just putting the game plan together, but how we're going to teach that game plan. You know, preparing my coaches for that. So, like, those are, like, the detailed fundamentals for me. And if I can do that, if I can execute those, you know, not necessarily with 100% physical effort, but with 100% focus,
mm-hmm.
And I can do that consistently,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell my players, you know, like, there's not one thing in that mentions talent, you know. But if you can do those things as a player, you're going to find athletic success in some way. It might not mean you're all American, but you're going to find success if you can just do those things right there. And so, yeah, the consistent execution of the detailed fundamentals with 100% effort.
How do you stay consistent? Like, what is it? Do you have people in your life to kind of help push you to stay consistent? Is it just a natural drive? Like, is it a combination of those things? Because being consistent, the reason you can be great through consistency is because it's not easy.
Yeah.
Because everybody can't do it.
That's real. That's real. I think it's a combination of that. You know, I'd be lying if I said I've been like that my whole life, my entire adult life, because I haven't. But I think it's just a matter of understanding and knowledge, you know, and a big part of it to me, and which is crazy, but I was telling somebody this, and I think it was Sean I was telling this, but a big part of it to me is like, maybe this is because I'm a black man, I don't know, but I refuse for you to look at me and say, oh, well, you ain't, or he ain't, you know, like, I don't know. And so the refusal to be looked at like I'm not taking care of my business drives me to take care of my business.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like I have to be, in order for me to get to where I want to go, I have to be exceptionally better than my counterparts, than anybody else in my profession. And so it's that conviction in me that's like, you gotta get up and do this.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling a buddy of mine who's also a coach, he's going to be when he gets his shot to be a head coach, he's going to be amazing. When he gets his shot to be a head coach, he's going to be amazing. But we were talking the other day, and he's like, yeah, man, I'm not that organized. I was like, neither am I. I was like, but the thing I know about you is just like myself, like, because you know it has to be done, you're going to spend that extra time to get to be organized, you know, because I wouldn't consider myself an organized person. But, you know, parents, coaches, administration, they're like, dadgum, he's organized. But I have to work at it. Yeah. You know, like, I have to spend a lot of time doing it. Otherwise, you know, to me, it's about, like, you know, just splattering paint on the wall. That's the way my mind initially thinks of things.
Yeah.
And then I have to go in and, like, really try to figure out what goes where, how it goes there. And that's the extra time I have to spend in getting organized. And so, but, you know, just the consistency part of it is, I think it's a matter of, you know, learning different techniques on how to, you know, be consistent. And then just, you know, just that inner drive. Here's another thing I say. I don't, like, people think coaches motivate people, and I just do not subscribe to that theory. I don't believe that we are motivated, because I don't think that motivation is an existential thing. I think it's an internal thing. I think motivation comes from within for whatever reason. Like, if you don't want to do something, I cannot motivate you to do that. Period, point blank. Like, I think that, you know, if you want to be a good football player, I can inspire you and I can teach you how to be a good football player. I can inspire you to be greater than you think you can be in that area, but it starts with you being motivated to do that. And so I say that to say, you know, from a personal perspective, from a consistent perspective, like, you have to be self-motivated to do whatever it is that you want to do. And it starts with that. And then you can learn other ways to be consistent in it.
That's good, man. That's really good. Man, I appreciate this, man. How can people find you, connect with you? Are you still doing some music? Like, games? What you want people to – how people can connect with you?
Well, first of all, so let me think. I got a lot of things I got going on. So from a football perspective, Coach Josh Norman, Joshua Norman, I'm the head football coach at Southmore High School in Moore, Oklahoma. On Twitter, you can find me at 3CBallCoach.
Okay.
The letter 3, then C, ball coach. Musically, J Lee the producer is my moniker. And you can find me at J Lee Productions on Twitter, on Instagram. And then also do food. The Wang Dang and Doodle.
That's Wayne Dang and Doodle.
Yep, that's my food company. And so,
what, Where do people get a taste of that? Is that something that happens regularly, or like what is it?
I'm currently working on establishing a restaurant.
Okay.
And initially it was me doing, I mean, I still do caterings and I still are. And every now and again, I'll do plates or whatever, you know, where you can place your order and for a certain date and I'll deliver it.
Okay.
But you know, at this point in time, I'm not going to be able to do that because we full swing in football right now. And so
I was about to say, this must be a springtime, like Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was a quarantine thing. It was a quarantine project.
So, a COVID project.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell, man.
That's cool.
If you want to hit me up, you can. I mean, hit my email or. I don't, I mean, phone number. Is it smart to get my phone number out?
I mean,
I don't care.
Some high school.
so many people got my number, man.
It don't even matter, huh?
Yeah, Bob at this Goff, point, it don't matter.
Bob, you know who Bob Goff is?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Bob, I think he puts it in his book, you know, his phone numbers in every book. Yeah. It don't matter. Like, I just don't even get my net because, you know, I've been to counseling because my counselor says, like, Hedy, because I had like 1,000 or something unread text messages.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you do need counseling, man. God dang it, dude. Still?
And so he's like, Hedy, why does everybody have your number anyway? You know, like, if you're not going to respond, like, why even give your number? And so I don't know how that happens. So.
I actually put my phone number on the album, somebody's album that I produced. We did like this. Like a skit, but it was like a radio commercial, and I put my number on there, and I actually got business off of that.
So, really?
Yeah. People would call me. Is this Jay Lee, the producer from the Brother Pawn album? Yep.
So. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Hopefully I ain't missing out. I always tell people, like, if they really want me, they'll text me back again. Like, if it's an emergency,
I'm gonna need you to check your text message, man.
Unless they found somebody else to do the job. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's either one of those two things. They either text me back or they find somebody else to do the job, man.
Well, if they want to get in touch with me, my number is...
Go on and give it to them.
Area code 619-726-9823.
Josh Norman, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, thanks again for hitting that play button for another episode of the Hedy Coleman Podcast. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, as always, go win.
Go win.